The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And now, it's time for Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on 103.9 LI News Radio.
Welcome, everybody. It must be Saturday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m., or it might be Wednesday night from 9 to 10 p.m. We're on twice a week to talk about your career, look at the job market, dissect the talent pools, consider every workplace issue that's ever been written about, look at the economy, whatever we can do to help people be successful. That's what this show is devoted to. We have an interesting guest today who's written a couple of books. We'll see if we can get to two of them. One of them is about artificial intelligence. We did a show just last week about artificial intelligence, talking about the big comment made by the CEO of NVIDIA, one of the largest artificial intelligence and most successful artificial intelligence companies in the world, who basically said, if you're a computer science major, you should drop out of your major. That is how severe he believes the wave of artificial intelligence job losses will be happening. Not everyone agrees with him. I'm sure my guest doesn't. Speaking of my guest, it's Philip Blackett, an author, consultant, and entrepreneur who previously has worked with FedEx, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and Chick-fil-A. He got his Master's of Divinity degree from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. His MBA is from Harvard Business School, not a bad place, and his bachelor's degree, majoring in political science and economics, from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Welcome, Philip, to Radio Jobline.
Hey, Scott. Pleasure to be on here. Thanks so much for the opportunity to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, we ran across each other on LinkedIn. Am I right?
I believe so.
Okay, and I just saw something about your book, and I thought, well, that would appeal to the audience, and that's why people should be on LinkedIn. So, you know, of course, everybody tries to sell you something on LinkedIn, Phil, so it's getting a little congested, but I'm glad that we ran across each other. So your book is called Future Proof. Let me just read a couple of sentences here. Are you worried about the impact of artificial intelligence on your job? Do you want to proactively enhance your skills and stay ahead in an evolving workforce? Did you know that artificial intelligence can actually augment your skills and make you more valuable to businesses? But how can you leverage this technology to safeguard your career? The book, Future Proof, How to Adopt and Master Artificial Intelligence to Secure a Job and Career, is an indispensable guide for working professionals, both white-collar and blue-collar, who want to understand and leverage the potential of artificial intelligence and machine learning. This book provides practical guidance and actionable insights to help you enhance your skills, productivity, and long-term value to your employers, businesses, and organizations. And you know, Philip, the first question that comes to my mind is, of course, the genesis of the book, but have you been hearing what I've been hearing about CEOs of companies really discouraging people from getting computer science degrees?
Yeah, that's the first time I heard that one from the CEO of NVIDIA, Scott. I was honestly thinking you were going to mention the quote that's often attributed to him with relation to AI, basically saying, it's not AI that's going to replace your job. It's the person that knows AI that's going to replace your job.
Right.
So I thought you originally were going to say that. But to your point about computer science, now this is the first time I'm hearing this. I mean, this comes from a guy that first learned about computer science. Like, it was important that they taught it freshman year in high school for me. I didn't last long. I only took 1 year of that class, and I was just like, hey, I don't mind, like, creating websites via, like, I think it was like Microsoft Front Page or some old school web processing software now, which pales compared to what's available now. But yeah, that's the first time I'm hearing that.
And another kind of a nightmarish comment that I heard came from a computer science student who told me that they had a speaker come to his class. This is from a student, I won't tell you from which college, right here on Long Island, Philip. And that person said, you know, there's going to be a gigantic reduction in the number of computer science majors needed. You really ought to major in business or in something else. It's okay to get your computer science degree, but you're going to need other skills because the amount of coding is going to be reduced because of artificial intelligence. So it's a pretty scary world for computer science folks. You know, for all these years, Philip, we've been promoting computer science jobs. We've been promoting computer science careers. We have outreach programs here on Long Island that go into high schools with the coolest technology to get kids interested in engineering and computer science. And so all of a sudden now there seems to be this, you know, little stop in your tracks or take a breather or a pause and let's think about what artificial intelligence is doing. So let's talk about it. So how can artificial intelligence be helpful to you?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question, Scott. Like, even to your point, with regards to computer science and coding, you know, I think even in light of what the CEO said, like, I think there's at least an iota of truth to it, that even if it comes off as surprising, oh my gosh, I can't believe these guys say this. What I would say for anybody that has that reaction, your response is definitely warranted as far as surprise. What I would also say is, after having that surprise element, take a moment to dig a little deeper to figure out, okay, what is he meaning by this? Because there's a part of what he says I actually agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was in high school, that was about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that computer science was one where it's like, okay, the smart people, that's what they did to get the best type of job. 5-10 years before today, coding was one where it's like, that's the one thing. Like, you got to be a software engineer.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a 6-figure salary, put in the investment to learn about coding, to learn about software engineering. You can go off to New York or Silicon Valley and make a really good living for your life and for your family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you take a step back as far as AI, what you have to think about is, yeah, software engineering is not going to be the same as what it was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens with AI, Scott, is you now have tools that can be just as smart as a junior coder. And they're constantly getting better by the minute, by the day.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about it with AI, I often tell people, especially, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners I work with, is recognize this. As somebody that has employed people before, AI is not something that, you know, they'll take off work. AI doesn't take vacation. AI doesn't take sick days. AI doesn't wake up in the middle of the night and say, do I really want to go to work today?
And it doesn't sleep.
You know, just, it doesn't sleep.
Right.
It doesn't want to halfway do its job. So you're thinking about it in the sense that, you know, I absolutely agree that from a coding perspective, there are tools right now, AI-driven, that can do just as good of a job as a junior coder, if not better,
mm-hmm.
which means that a lot of these businesses have to make tough decisions on whether or not they keep the same roster of coders that they had before, or as what I'm seeing already, there's a number of companies that are laying off hundreds, if not thousands of people, including the tech industry, because they're making that investment in AI. So
yep. Yeah.
When I think about that, what goes on in my head is more so figuring out, what are they trying to replace and how do I get ahead of it to help protect my chances of not just staying on the job, but hopefully being promoted, hopefully being seen as a linchpin to that company's success. And oftentimes what I see it as somebody that works alongside AI, that's the person that's going to do well going forward the next 10 plus years.
Right. Now, you may find this interesting, Philip, for your own research and your own thoughts. We have one of the largest executive search firms in this region, right here on Long Island, where I work, at a place called Executive Alliance. And we have 14 different specialty areas. One of those areas is IT, where we make quite a number of placements. I mean, it's always been one of our biggest placement areas. It has not done well in the last, I'm going to say 12 months. Because first it was the layoffs, you know, Facebook and Microsoft and all the biggies laying off a couple of percent of their people, which in totality isn't so bad because they have so many employees that when you lay off 1,000 and you have, you know, 1 million, you know, it's nothing. But it's gotten a little bit worse, you know, over the course of the year, and it's scaring companies into thinking, well, are we going to have to do that? You know, of course, they're not the size of Facebook or Twitter or any of these companies that have had massive layoffs. But it has, you know, impacted the talent pool and that particular job market. I'm noticing now this wave of AI that is now scaring even more people. You know, so I think what's happening is there's a fear factor that's going on right now about the impact of AI on computer science grads and software engineers and programmers and everything. So we're sort of in this weird muddled zone, you know, where there's give, there's take, there's positive, there's negative, there's one CEO saying this, head of a computer science department saying this. So it's a lot of confusion, Phil. So if you can help us sort through it, you know, that would be great. Do you think maybe it's being over dramatized?
I think to some degree it is. I mean, oftentimes we fear what we don't understand, right? And so a good way to put this in perspective is I look at AI as similar to when we first came across the internet, right? Like even dial up internet, like making sure like, you know, no one's on the phone while you're trying to get on American Online or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, whether it's like the internet or text messaging on your phone or smartphone for that matter, you can go back to like the actual phone, the telephone. You know, railroads, steam engine, electricity, any sort of major advance in technology, I would venture to say that you probably had a group of people that were scared of what this meant. And on top of that, what did it mean for them? And so I think, you know, trying to be like a student of history, you kind of see certain patterns. And I think this is one that's similar with a new technology with regards to AI, which we have to understand this is only going to get that much more advanced and better by the month and by the year. Like AI, like next year should be significantly different from what we're experiencing. So I think a lot of the fear, I get it. We're trying to figure this thing out. And even to the sense of a business, somebody that's hiring people, you know, you're kind of feeling fear on both ends. Like one is like, oh my gosh, like all this technology is going on. Like I want to keep the people I have, but you know, what if I have to let somebody go? Like even if it's just a few hundred for a company like Facebook, you know, as somebody who has been laid off before, you know, that feeling hurts.
Yeah.
You know, that's a reality I wouldn't wish on anybody.
Yeah. And the job market is not so great. So if you were at Facebook and got laid off, then, you know, you have to get a job someplace. So, and I noticed right here in New York, you know, with Twitter, it was a bloodbath. You know, they were letting everybody go. So, don't get me started on Musk, but the bottom line is that there's a muddled conversation going on. A real lack of leadership in this field. There's a lack of guardrails that scares the hell out of me. When I think about the fact that looking at the power of AI, that, you know, Congress has come up with virtually nothing so far, nothing. So you can do anything you want with AI as of this moment, without any federal regulations or so on. That scares me too. So, you know, AI is a big thorn right now, pretty much in everybody's side. Now, I know companies are benefiting from it. It helps decision making on the corporate side. You know, companies are able to use data in a way they couldn't before. That's instantaneous. So I like the advances that AI can do. When I write my weekly column for LinkedIn. I'm able to use AI to get some ideas and thoughts that help me with my articles, which I think that is great. Although I wouldn't let it write an article for me because it has that mechanical sound. It doesn't really sound like a human is writing the story as much as it tries, but that I'm sure will improve as well. So it's kind of like, well, where have we been and where are we at now and where is all this going? But in your case, Philip, this segment is all about what can you do about it? What can you do to make AI work for you?
Yeah, so I think for me, a few things come up top of mind. Like the first thing I would say for anybody is, you know, we first got to get our mindset on the right place when it comes to AI. Like the first thing I would say is, let's learn the truth about artificial intelligence as an opportunity for your growth professionally and not necessarily a threat unless you ignore it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the second thing I think about is, once you accept it as an opportunity that can serve you, an opportunity that can help you grow in your career or expand on your job opportunities, let's explore how AI can improve the way you do your job and make you more productive and valuable to the company you work for. Here's an example of what that will look like. Take your job description, and you just got to do an honest inventory of what you do on a day-to-day basis. Have a category where you say, hey, these are the jobs to be done, the tasks that I'm asked to do, that no one outside of me can do this as good as I can do, or it has to be me that actually does it, right? Put those jobs in one bucket. Then outside of that bucket, look at the jobs you have to do that you feel like you can either delegate to somebody that, if they did 80% as well as you, it's fine. If they do better than that, even better. And I'm not necessarily saying there, oh, take those jobs and give it to somebody else. That somebody else to consider is AI. Because essentially, you hit on a great point, Scott. You know, I wouldn't trust AI to do an article from beginning to end and just submit it.
Right.
Even though I kind of fear teachers nowadays that might have to deal with that reality for students that wait for the last minute to turn in an essay and they get a mechanical essay turned in by Johnny. But what I would say is, what's helpful about what you illustrated, Scott, is, you know, just to start out an article from a blank page can be intimidating for some people, right? That's where writer's block comes into play. But if 80% of writing that paper, for example, you can outsource, quote unquote, to AI, basically sharing, here's what I want this paper to look like. Here's what I'm writing on. Bring in certain research sources, come up with a certain tone, include these items or supporting points in it, and then you let it run. In a matter of seconds, depending on the AI tool, it can produce a solid first draft of what your article can be. And what has probably saved you maybe 30 minutes of time, an hour maybe. And now, to your point, Scott, you can go back into that first draft after like a minute and put in your own voice to it. Maybe take some words out, add some other words, use your own way of saying things. And you can have a more finalized draft in a fraction of the time. Like, that is a great example of saying, hey, what are the things that I can only do? I'll add that to the article. And what things can I outsource? And then now you're basically working alongside AI rather than against it or without it.
All right, so that makes perfect sense, and I think we all know, and if we don't, we should, that artificial intelligence, when it comes to papers and perhaps by next year PowerPoints and even graphical images you want to post on social media, it's going to be a big time saver, okay? But then your graphic artists would turn around and say, well, then they're coming after my job, you know, or your social media coordinator won't be quite as necessary because your marketing guy can put up the posts. So in other words, for every positive thing that you see. I could see how a person would see a negative.
Right. And so I think what goes on there, Scott, is once again, how do we get ahead of where AI is? Like you talked to an important point there, like graphic artists. Absolutely. Hate to surprise people on this show. But yeah, the person that knows AI to create graphics in a fraction of the time compared to others, yes, certain jobs may be at risk there. But at the same time, okay, recognize the truth of the matter is like, okay, this is more so a productivity game rather than whether or not your job is going to be replaced. Because the thought that comes to my mind and hopefully to others is if I can produce images in seconds versus hours, how much more work can I get done?
Right. So you're looking at it strictly from a productivity standpoint. Folks, you're listening to Philip Blackett, an author, consultant, and entrepreneur who previously has worked with FedEx, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and Chick-fil-A, a highly educated person with an MBA from Harvard, who's now giving his opinion on how AI is going to impact us. And we're going to talk also about disagreeing without disrespect coming up shortly. If you have an idea and would like to be on Radio Jobline, you can write to me, scottp118@gmail.com, scottp118@gmail.com. And by all means, connect with me on LinkedIn because I post, after they broadcast here at the studio, I post all of the Radio Job Lines on my LinkedIn account. So that's something you need to do in case you ever need some thoughts on, for example, this show. Philip, we'll be back. Listeners, we'll be back in just a moment.
And now, welcome back to Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on LI News Radio.
Welcome, everybody. Listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Possessor. We're on for you every week to talk about your career, look at the talent pools. And lately, we've been focused a little bit on artificial intelligence and the impact that it's having not only on the computer science field, but on the entire job market, on the entire world, it wouldn't be a stretch to say. And we have with us Philip Blackett, an author, consultant, and entrepreneur, previously has worked with FedEx, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and Chick-fil-A, to drop a few names. And he has an MBA from Harvard Business School, so it's hard to question him. He's written a book called Future Proof, How to Adopt and Master Artificial Intelligence to Secure Your Job and Career. By the way, Philip, where can you get that book?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon. So definitely look up Future Proof or my name, Philip Blackett, and you'll be able to see it.
Okay, and that's spelled Blackett, right?
Sure.
Okay. And we were talking before the break, Philip, we were talking about sort of a framework for future-proofing yourself. We talked about learning the truth about AI. We talked about how AI can improve the way you do your job and make you more productive. And we certainly, I think, hit that point well. What's the next step?
Yeah, so the next step is once you got a sense of what things that you absolutely can do better than anyone else or you have to do, and then the other bucket as things that you could essentially outsource to AI to get more productive in what you do, the next step I would say is let's start testing out opportunities. This is the point where you're going to have to experiment how to use AI in your own particular job function for those things that you can outsource. And so what you're essentially trying to do is gradually, not all of a sudden, but gradually include AI to enhance what you do, the work, each day. So a good example of that would be the article example we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to starting from scratch, could you use an AI tool to come up with a first draft? It didn't come up with your final draft. That's what you'll add your own touch to in personalization. But that might be something to figure out, okay, what's a tool or a service I can use AI-driven out there that can help me with this particular job to be done? Right. And so you test them out, you see what works, and you see what works, and you keep working with it. And so the next step I would say is this shouldn't be an individual pursuit. what I mean by that is this is a perfect opportunity to build networking and mentoring relationships with others, primarily to become more educated with artificial intelligence. So in your job, in your workspace, in your company or organization, there probably are other people that are trying to learn how to use AI for their jobs and careers as well. That's a great opportunity to touch base with them, share what you're learning, share what tools you might be using as well. They may do the same thing, vice versa. And so now you're sharing information that's helpful for both of you that can help not just the company or organization work with, but you can actually venture out outside of your company and go to different conferences, different events, listen to podcasts, read certain books, listen to certain radio shows that talk about AI, and just continue to get into that last step of what I talk about, to future-proof your job and career with AI, which is basically embrace a growth mindset. Ultimately, AI is here to stay. It's helpful for us to learn as much as we can now and continue that growth going forward across our career. So as you grow to master AI in how you do your job, it can help lead you to future opportunities where if you're learning how AI can help you with your job, how it can help other people in their job, you're networking with other people, you're learning, you're continuously educating yourself on different things that are applicable to you or to others, you now start to become more of a thought leader in your organization. You start to become known as somebody that, hey, we got to let Scott's company or on this project because he knows a lot more about AI than we do, and he can be very helpful. He is a value add. This is a great example of how you stay ahead of AI, which is constantly, you know, improving. So we just have to constantly improve with it, and we can do that if we have the right growth mindset.
All right. So attend conferences, webinars, raise your hand, you know, at your company, do whatever you can to learn and master it so that it doesn't boggle you down. It propels you. That's the real goal.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So all good advice. You know what I have noticed? I'm sure you're on LinkedIn because I think that's where we met. What I've noticed is almost every day I get a strange email from someone I don't know saying, you know, our company installs AI and gives you the best of AI so you can use AI in your daily functions and all this other stuff. And if it happened once or twice, I wouldn't have said anything about it. But I would say I've gotten 100 such emails over the last 2 months. It's more than one a day. Doing it, you know, asking me, trying to sell me the same thing. They want to sell me AI. They want to help me integrate AI into my life. And when that happens, you know, especially off a platform like LinkedIn, you begin to wonder, am I the one that's not with it? You know, or are all these people just trying to make a dime because, you know, they have nothing else to do? Maybe they lost their job as a software engineer. So it's a little perplexing that all of a sudden everybody wants to sell you AI.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, like I said, how we started with the CEO of NVIDIA, you know, take a look to just delve a little bit into this and figure out, okay, why is this happening? Is this truly like a trend that people are seeing in which maybe the people that are selling you this, they're seeing an opportunity to help educate and help a lot of people that might be hesitant to embrace AI or maybe even fearful of how AI can be a part of their lives or their businesses or careers. And so just trying to see where the opportunity may be as far as what your next step can be from that point.
Maybe a little call with one of these folks wouldn't be so bad because it goes back to the framework point that you were making about embracing a growth mindset. You know, maybe they can educate me. Maybe, you know, even if I don't buy, maybe they could tell me ways that I can use AI that I'm not thinking of using it right now. So I think Philip's point, and I agree with it completely, is any way you can learn more about AI, read the books, read the, you know, subscribe, you know, talk to people who are in the field, talk to people who are selling the product, and capture as much knowledge as you can so you can constantly stay away from it. Is that a good way to end it, Phil?
Absolutely. I agree with you.
All right. So let's move on to something also that that really caught my attention when we first met, when you sent me your various synopses of the books. One was called Disagree Without Disrespect. And here's a little promo. Are you tired of engaging in debates that quickly escalate into personal attacks and animosity? Yes. Do you long for a world where diverse thoughts are respected and celebrated, even in the face of strong disagreements? Have you ever wondered how to have a respectful and productive conversation on complex and sensitive topics such as politics, religion, or social issues without causing offense or damaging relationships with your friends and family? And you know, Phil, I had to touch this one because look what's happening with the pro-Palestinian sit-ins, right? You've got all colleges all over the world, all over the United States, with pro-Palestinians. And do they really know what it would be like to divest from a company that Israel is doing business with or anything like that? I mean, I'm not sure there's any sort of coordination with this, but it's happening. This discourse is happening right in the middle of a very divided country. You know, you have people that watch the right-wing news, people that watch the left-wing news, people that vote for the right-wing politicians, people that vote for the left-wing politicians. But there used to be a better discourse. Now, it's anger. It's like, you know, you could see one person who supports Donald Trump get very offended if you say, well, there's no proof that the election was stolen. And all of a sudden, you've got anger. Now you're dealing with anger. It just took like a split microsecond, you know, to go from not being angry to angry. It's the same thing with Democrats. You know, if you challenge a Democratic piece of legislation or immigration or anything like that, people are going to get all upset. Everybody's so mad at everybody. So this is a great time for your book, you know, to sort this out, because I don't think people are being respectful. I think people are spewing venom. That would be my take on this. So how do you get it to a much more civil base?
Yeah, it's probably the question of the year for sure. You know, I'd say, listen, you know, we've gotten to a point now where if you have any sort of difference of opinion on just about any issue, like you run the risk of, you know, losing friends both on social media and in real life, maybe even cursed out in the comment section, or being awkwardly distanced either within your family at the family reunion or the holiday party or even at the job. You know, I think we've lost a respect for diversity of thought. And what has to come with that is how we respectfully listen to one another, even if we disagree, and look at it as having a conversation to learn rather than an argument to win.
So it's the basically the perspective then. But what do you do when you're talking to a person, Phil, that does not have that perspective and, you know, wants to fight?
Right. And that's one where you have to be able to make a call and say, hey, you know, is there an opportunity here we can actually exchange ideas and actually hear each other out? Or is this somebody that just wants somebody else to be angry at? And listen, I don't know about you, but I only have 24 hours in my day and my time is precious. And I don't want to necessarily be arguing with someone that is just looking for yet another person to be angry at, you know? And so I think if you come across a person like that, for example, you have to decide whether or not it makes sense to engage, or better yet, maybe just to respectfully disengage.
Yeah, I mean, such a decision can be made, but usually it's on the fly and tempers are flaring and nostrils are flaring all at the same time. But I'd like you to set it up for us. So if you want to engage in a conversation about an important social issue or something like politics or religion, what's the best way to do it, Phil? How can you do it without, you know, getting stuck in the anger chain?
Yeah, I think that's perfect. And I'll even take it one step further, Scott. You know, I'll actually bring it to something that people debate on almost on a daily basis as well, just in a different venue. We can even take this to sports, right? So you're in New York. Sports is big. You can pick your, which one do you like more so, Scott?
Baseball.
Perfect. So let's pitch you up. Like, who do you like more, the Mets or the Yankees?
Yankees.
Okay. So let's pitch you up against someone who loves the New York Mets. It could be a friend of yours, family relative, who knows, and that's what, right? So you're of the opinion that New York Yankees is better than New York Mets. Now, obviously, the other person thinks the exact opposite. Here's how I would go about this as far as the framework when you're having this conversation on who's going to win or who's the better team. The first step I would look at it is separate the idea or the belief from the identity of the believer, right? And what I mean by that, Scott, is, you know, listen, I get it. Fan is short for fanatic. You know, we might eat, live, sleep, dream Yankees or Mets and that sort, right? But if you're having a conversation about this, it's helpful to say, hey, what we're going to talk about is whether or not the Yankees are better than the Mets or vice versa. And understand that that idea, whether you think the Yankees or the Mets is better, that's the idea we're going to focus on. That's not inherent with who I am as a person, where if I was to say Yankees are not better, I'm more so disputing the idea, but I'm not also directly attacking you as the person who believes that idea. See, oftentimes what happens is that we live in a society now that we get this confused of thinking, like, to love somebody is contingent on you agreeing with them. It's like absolutely like unbelievable to think that I can actually appreciate you as a friend or love you as a family member and not think that the Yankees are the best team in baseball, right? It's just like it's unfathomable, but it is possible. And one of the reasons how I say that real quick is, when I was growing up, Scott, like, my mom worked in the courtroom legally, and there were two attorneys, obviously, that were disputing opposing views. Very opinionated, very passionate. I'm getting very heated. The ironic thing I would see after that discussion, if you want to call it that, in the courtroom is, oftentimes I would see those same two attorneys afterwards, once they leave the courtroom, they'll often shake hands. They'll often say, like, good job on here. And they'll oftentimes will go to lunch with one another. I might spot them at their daughter's soccer game.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually like friends outside of it. And that was the thing, whether it's dealing with law or politics, it's like the thought of, you can have a different opinion, but you can still be friends with that person. It's kind of similar here, even with Yankees and Mets. Like, that is a possibility. We just got to remind ourselves how that happened. And so, you know, like I said, the first step is separate the idea from the identity of the belief. The second one I would say is, hey, I may disagree that the Yankees are the best team in New York, and I can still love you as the believer. It's kind of a play on the whole phrase, hate the sin, love the sinner.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So I could be one that completely, I detest the Yankees. I'm a diehard New York Mets fan. But that shouldn't preclude me from being able to talk to Scott as my friend and see how he's doing and care for him and have, you know, some cheesecake with him after a long day at work or what have you, or be with the family and that sort. So being able to understand that you can disagree with the idea or dislike it and yet still love the believer.
I mean, I get the show good sportsmanship thing, but what happens if two adversaries are going into an argument and one is quoting a fact and the other one is disputing the fact? What happens then?
Yeah, so that gets to like my third step, like debate the idea just on its merit. So, like, if you bring in a fact and I dispute the fact, then let's hash it out. Like, I'd much rather would do that and see, like, just based on its merits, what's the idea in discussion, if it works out or not, rather than calling you outside of your name, Scott, rather than, you know, drumming up this over emotional response that gets you so awkward to even engage in a conversation with me. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you would possibly say that, Scott. You're the worst person that's ever said that in my life. And you're thinking to yourself in the back and like, okay, like, how do I even respond to this?
Yeah, fortunately for me, I love Met fans. I anyone that appreciates baseball is on my good side, you know? So it's hard for me to get into that kind of an argument with baseball, but in matters of politics and religion, you got any special tips for those two? Because that's where the mess starts.
Yeah, and especially the time we're talking about this now is a huge year where we talk about this. Even if we're taking it to religion and politics, Scott, it's just, you know, listen, if you're debating the idea based on merit, understand this. It's like more than likely, if somebody's very convicted in what they believe religion-wise or politics, it may be a really tough battle to win that. You might not be able to convince that person. That gets to like my fourth step. It's like, honestly, like, I think it's a win even to have the conversation. If you can have the conversation without name calling, without trying to silence the other person or cancel that person, or just cut off all talks of a conversation to begin with, and you can actually learn from the other person and vice versa, like that is a win.
So maybe set up rules, Philip, maybe set up rules at the beginning of the conversation?
Yep, absolutely. Just, hey, look, I love to have this conversation with you, Scott. Here's what I ask in return, right? Let's stick to the facts here. Like, I respect you to share your viewpoint. Allow me to share my viewpoint in return. Ask questions. Don't assume. Don't, you know, put, you know, barriers for us to have a conversation or not in that sort, or make it awkward. And if that's cool with you, Scott, then, you know, let's go. Let's have it. Let's talk it out. Let's discuss. Let's have a conversation.
All right.
And if they agree, go at it. If they don't, then that's when you say, hey, you know what? Maybe it's probably right for us not to engage you.
All right. So great advice, Phil. And I just want to leave 30 seconds for you to give a website or the name of the company or any way people can get the books or find out more about you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Scott. So my name is Philip Blackett. My website is www.philipblackett.com, philipblackett.com. You can also check out my books on Amazon.com. So either Disagree Without Disrespect, How to Respectfully Debate with Those Who Think, Believe, and Vote Differently from You, or Future Proof, How to Adopt and Master Artificial Intelligence to Secure Your Job and Career.
All right. Thanks so much, Philip, for giving us a synopsis of both books. We crammed it into an hour, but it sounded great. And I really appreciate our connection. And we'll have you on again real soon. You've been listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Possessor. Come on the show. Write to me, scottp118@gmail.com. Happy to have you or your idea on the show. And connect with me on LinkedIn so you get all the Radio Joblines after the year at the broadcast. Have a great week, everybody. Happy hunting.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.